And the issue was one, or the divorce was one of mutual consent. Although the husband had the initiative, it was he who initiated the process, and that was the unequal status. A husband gives the divorce document, which in Hebrew is called the get, of his own free will. The woman must receive it of her own free will. And if this equal free will is not experienced, then the divorce is not valid. Over the centuries, steps were taken to grant some greater leverage to the wife. The wife can petition a court to force her husband to divorce her based on a variety of claims, such as the husband's improper behavior towards her. Unfortunately, if the husband refuses to offer the get, to offer the divorce document, he can place his wife in a situation of limbo, where she cannot marry again because she is technically still married to her husband. And since the husband has to consent, and if he refuses, for all sorts of reasons, he is in fact imposing upon his wife a life of misery. And so when a husband refuses to grant his wife a divorce, and the court believes, the Jewish religious court, that the wife's claims are justified, it can enforce all sorts of coercion, even jail, to pressure the husband to grant the divorce. The rabbinic formulation was, they pressure him until he says, I consent. Preservation of life is supreme in Judaism. And all religious laws are abrogated to maintain a person alive. And this is an interesting point. Not only is preservation of life a cardinal requirement, but preservation of health is considered a mitzvah, a commandment. There have been, for instance, rabbis who have come out with legal injunctions, that is to say religious legal injunctions, against smoking, because it goes against the commandment of preserving life. Or, for instance, if a person endangers his or her life by fasting on Yom Kippur, and that is something to be determined by a doctor, it is forbidden to fast on Yom Kippur. But of course, when death occurs, a detailed system of burial and of mourning sets in. As we mentioned in an earlier lecture, ideally, a dying person should recite the Shema and confess his or her sins before death. Clearly, that cannot always be the case. After a person dies, the corpse is cleansed to this day, cleansed and dressed in plain white shrouds. The idea being, of course, we are all equal in death. Men frequently have their prayer shawls, their talit, placed on them as they are about to be buried. In Judaism, burial in the ground is the only system that is countenanced by tradition. In ancient times, people might bury in caves, family mausoleums were also used, but that was the system. In antiquity, it was actually common to have burial carried out in two stages. At first, they would place the corpse in a cave. They would let that corpse decompose for the period of a year. They would then go, and they believed that during that year the corpse was actually being purged of all its sins, or rather that person who had died is being purged of sins. After a year, the family would return to the cave, gather the bones up, and that was considered a holiday for the family, and place the bones in a small container known as an ossuary. And we have discovered over the years hundreds and hundreds of such ossuaries throughout ancient Palestine, some of them with beautiful artwork. And quite frankly, one has to wonder if that system will not be introduced at some future stage, certainly in the modern state of Israel, because since burial can only take place in the ground, we're running out of ground. And this is not a very economical system. The system of gathering bones up together in a small container might be a solution. In Judaism, plain wooden caskets were the preference.